This is the Minding Your Own Business podcast, brought to you by Elder Research. Each episode, we'll bring in data and analytics gurus from around the world as they regale us with their data analytics stories and enlighten us with their secrets for how to turn data into actionable insights. Now, here's our host, Evan Wimpy, who will guide us as we dare to mind our own business.
Hello, and welcome to the Minding Your Own Business podcast. I'm your host, Evan Wimpy, and today I'm super excited to introduce our guest, Rob Horbin. Rob is the AVP of Data Science at Pacific Life, where he runs the Advanced Analytics Center of Enablement. Rob, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm excited to be here, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Hey, fantastic. To get started, can you just give us a little bit about your background and how you got into data science?
Certainly. So as you mentioned, I'm at Pacific Life and I run our COE in our retirement division for advanced analytics. And so in that capacity, we support our division, which focuses on people's retirement needs. So variable fixed annuities and mutual funds as well. And so I've been doing that for about 4 years, grew that team over that time, and about 14 years of experience in financial services and insurance, where I've done things like reinsurance finance, distress program turnaround, strategy. And then I found my way into data science about 10 years ago. And so from there, I really found my niche, if you will. Everything was prologue to that point, and I was able to leverage both my undergrad in mechanical engineering, as well as my master's in information systems and my MBA. And I actually was a career switcher, pre-business school, where I actually did mechanical engineering in the shipbuilding industry. So although I've been doing financial services and really found my space there for 14 years now, I still sometimes think in Six Sigma concepts and you know, welding and things like that. So I guess it's a very formative experience when you're younger, right out of college. So,
yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, relatively new data science field, a lot of people who have in data science now leadership roles have come from another industry. So it's good to have the different backgrounds that you bring in there. So Rob, you know, Pacific Life does a whole lot. Can you talk about your team? You're on the, I think, Enablement, Advanced Analytics Center of Enablement. So that sounds great. Can you talk about sort of what that team does and what types of things you work on there?
Certainly. So it's a great model. It's also a lot of fun. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. So we've got a mix of data scientists, data engineers, visualization experts, and, you know, delivery managers, some, you know, somewhat akin to project managers, but they have to really understand the data science concepts. And first off, it's a great team, a great place to work as a company as well. So that's, you know, just a great starting point. What the work is really fun is because we really have adopted what we call a do partner support model. So one is we do. So sometimes internal clients come to us and they say, hey, I just need you to tell me if this thing worked or not with statistical significance. Okay, that's a do. Or hey, we just need you to build a list of contacts that we can go out when we launch a new product, because we want to have a real targeted focus to really make sure this product takes off in the market. Just give us a list. Okay. We also do things, what we call partner, where, and that's where we tend to connect more and more with the actuarial community, because they say, hey, you know, I want to learn to do this myself, and I've got some statistics, mathematics, and basic coding skills, sure, but I can't quite get out of the blocks. Can you help us with that? So I call it partner, or first, you know, we build, you watch, then you build, we watch, and now you just own. So not unlike, you know, learn to fly an airplane or drive a car. So we really love that model, because then it becomes really transformative. And then support. And so support is where we try new concepts, new technologies. And then we say, hey, is this really something that is commercialable, for monetizable within our environment? Or is it something that's maybe it's just a little too far out there? We don't have the risk appetite for this type of technology, whatever it may be. Or in some cases, this is something that we want to scale and we want to proliferate across the organization to give to people so that they can actually do data science in the business unit at the front line, trying to solve real business problems. And we really encourage that in a risk balanced way. So do partner support. And then as a result is we really get to connect with business partners who are really working on thorny problems, and they bring the problems to us, because from day one, we're just being helpful and really trying to lean in where people say, hey, I know you can do this, but I want to learn to do this. So we really love that And we structure our team to be able to support people's learning to do these things because, I mean, data science is fun. Who does it? It's just one big puzzle. So yeah, that's, it's been such a fun journey, and we've got great partners and great sponsorship up and down the organization. That's why we've been able to really be transformative.
Yeah, that's great. And you say you've got business partners. Does that touch all of the functions of Pacific Life? I think like the actual like finance and insurance teams and products, but then also like traditional business functions, your sales and marketing and HR and everything else.
That's a great question, Evan. So we work with, if I think about it, it's probably easier to say which teams we don't work with across the division. So we work a lot with our sales and marketing teams. We work a lot with finance. We work with actuarial teams. We work with strategy teams. We work with technology teams because we're, you know, technology adjacent, if you will. And when we started, we were in the technology space before we moved over to the digital side. And so for us, where the variation is actually on the types of products we're using. And so if we think about that do partner support model, much more of our work now is partnering, which is great. We still do get a lot of the, hey, can you just answer this question for us? But a lot more partnering because folks see that this is something that they want to continue to grow and really become part of everybody's day to day if we can. That's actually part of our charter, our objective. So some of the use cases would be, as I said, lead lists. We launch a new product. Who should we start our marketing blitz with, our marketing campaign and our distribution partners? Who should we start with? Because we think they'll have a propensity to want to use those products. Other examples are forecasting of sales and by territory nationally based on trends and external factors. So increasing the precision of that type of a time series model. Other examples are volume forecasting in call centers and operations areas so that we can load balance staff vacation times, not just seasonality, but also is there external factors coming and trying to find some of those deep signals so we can make sure that our customer satisfaction is good while we're also not burning folks out and, you know, folks can take vacation time. And customer experience is incredibly important for us as a company and one of our key factors that we believe to be helping us meet consumer demand. So really, we touch almost every group now in the finance and actuarial space. They've got a ton of statistics and knowledge and experience. So where we tend to focus with them is how do we help very robust approved processes run more smoothly? And that's, you know, data transfer, potentially making it easier to visualize the outputs, things like that.
Okay. Yeah. And it sounds like you certainly touch every piece there. So certainly has the transformative possibilities. I really do like the do partner support. Sounds absolutely like an internal consulting arm on the partner side. As your business partners grow capability and want to be able to do some of these things on their own, are there data science or data engineering roles that are sort of dispersed across the business as well, or Do those titles sit just on your team?
Most of it is within our space. From a data engineering perspective, there's quite a bit in technology. And so we have data engineers, we're very keenly focused on supporting analytical use cases. And data engineers have a much broader mandate in general around running a business. So we do have folks do it, but they do it in a very specific area of domain. And then we connect with our broader technology teammates. But there are data science or more data analyst type roles that are out there in the organization. And we encourage that because we want folks to be able to do some of this type of work. Well, there are data science teams in other parts of the company as well. And so we really interact with them as well. The majority though, that center of gravity for data science is with us. But we've actually had great success too, is some folks come to us as data scientists and say, hey, I loved running through these models, but I've really found that I really, really gravitate towards, marketing or sales or finance, and then they end up getting a sales or a finance role. So now they're, financial analyst or marketing analyst, but they actually have that data science, the data science strikes. And we encourage that because now it's another person that we can say, hey, can you help us understand the business context as well?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the center of gravity is with us.
Very, very good. Yeah. And it's great to have sort of those champions that can help translate, that are out in the business function and easy to talk back to your data science team. Rob, you mentioned when we first started the show, your background in academics is in engineering. You were in finance for a while. I think for a lot of data leaders, they didn't come out of school and immediately jump into data science. A lot of folks in statistics or computer science, economics like myself, engineering like yourself, I don't know much about actuarial sciences, but in my head, that maps pretty closely to a lot of the statistical rigor that's required in data science. So you've touched on that a little bit about some overlap there. I'm curious if you've noticed a huge overlap and how much transferability there is between the actuarial piece and the data science generalist piece.
Absolutely. So, you know, one thing that makes it easy is that engineer jokes, you know, we love engineer jokes. They transfer right to actuarial, right to data science, you know, very similar, you know, birds of a feather, very similar schemas. So we do work so closely with actuaries and, you know, I've seen actuaries actually, you know, we've interviewed some of them at times for data science positions. We've seen actuaries I know in industry have become great data scientists. Where I see some of the difference is, you know, being an actuary is such a rigorous, in some cases, decade long process to get certified, where you really dive deep and learn a lot, not just about the statistics component, but also about the understanding of regulatory components and how, you know, asset liability matching. It really becomes very, very vigorous around how to, not just the statistics, but also the inner workings of how a company manages, you know, an insurance company and assesses risk and also the financial aspect as well. So, you know, hats off to folks who do that because it is such a challenging, rigorous, marathon to do that. Where I think I see the overlap is, and you know, why I've always found actuaries to be kindred spirits as a mechanical engineer and then as a data scientist is the grounding in statistics and critical thinking and quantitative reasoning. So the way I always think about it is, you know, if an actuary is a quarterback, you know, data scientist is a running back and an engineer could be a tight end, you know, very complementary skills, but not a one-to-one. And so where I get really excited is when an actuary and a data scientist and a data engineer, they rally around a problem and say, how do we kind of make this thing work better? And because data scientists, they've learned a lot about the coding aspect, which really is increasingly, but not necessarily as pervasive in the actuarial curriculum. So they understand the coding and the statistics, the actuaries understand the statistics in the business context, and then the data engineers under the platform, understand the platform and the, you know, ETL transfer and storage, that becomes such a powerful combination that really, you know, if you could get one person who could do all of that, that person is a unicorn and they should, you know, demand sky high hourly raise. I could tell you that much, but yeah, so we really, really appreciate working with our actuarial partners and the lines get very blurry and increasingly are getting blurry. And speaking with actuarial folks that I'm close with, increasingly the Society of Actuaries, as I understand it, is making coding much more common in the actuarial testing, which as a data scientist, I fully support because that's just more folks that are making great decisions using this type of power.
Yeah, that's great. And it sounds like that's where your team can really support in the do support. I think you painted a really great picture of the complementary skill sets and how they can work together. I will say I was looking for the punchline when it's an actuary and a data scientist and a data engineer walk into a room. Hey,
don't talk to anybody. Right? No, I have met some actuaries who are actually very extrovert, but yeah, much like engineers,
perfect.
Tend to be on the quieter side.
Sure. Yeah. At least, yeah, you're right. You can recycle the engineering jokes there for sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, what jumped to my mind, you talk about the rigor with becoming an actuary versus the rigor, you know, I think it's a much broader spectrum on becoming a data scientist. You can get PhD in fields that are related to this. You can also take a 6-week bootcamp course and learn enough to be dangerous or enough to be really useful in you know, certain subsets and enough to get your foot in the door. So you've grown a team that has a lot of data science capabilities. What would you suggest to people today who are considering a career or considering at least a part of a career or embarking on some data science effort and some data science initiative?
So I had two parts there. One is around growing data science capability within a company, and I'll share some thoughts there. And then the second around the individual. And then actually, I'd love to get some share perspective there, but also I'd love to hear your perspective actually on both of these. So, you know, one, when I think about growing from an internal company, you know, there's a couple things I think of. One is, you know, strategic alignment. You know, we've got great sponsorship from day one. There was no selling it. This is a useful capability. It is, what is it going to look like and how are we going to do it? So first and foremost is, what's your strategic priorities? How do you take those priorities to specific use cases that you can then go after to show some progress? Second is building a core team that really loves to solve problems. And what I've seen work is, you know, data scientists, data engineers, a data scientist, a data engineer, a delivery project manager, and a business translator, someone who understands the business. So they can make sure they take it from, hey, I think I've got an idea with a business partner, all the way through to actually building a product that's going to get consumed. The third piece to that is starting with the end in mind. So it's great to build a model, but you have to also make sure that it's fit for purpose. And in the end, how are the folks going to consume it? Is it going to be embedded in a workflow system? Is it going to be a Excel spreadsheet that they get emailed once a day? What is that going to look like? How's it going to get consumed? And then that ties into the next point is really get in the shoes of the folks who are going to use the product. And so, you know, I've sat on sales desks and actually listened into calls. You know, I've gone on ride-alongs with wholesalers. I've sat in on actuarial risk meetings to really try and understand. And one thing is, talk about talented professionals. You know, they're just unbelievably talented folks that do this type of work. And I do not have that skill. That's lesson one. But it was just wonderful to really start to say, okay, I see the process they're going through. And then show them work in progress so they feel like they've got a say and they see their feedback turn around pretty quickly. So then when they get the product, they've already said, okay, now I know I'm going to use it in my day-to-day. So those are some of the key things I'd think about. So you're aligning the strategy, the day-to-day, making it easier for somebody. You're thinking about how they're going to consume it, and everyone's agreeing that it's going to be useful for the business. Any reactions there? You see so many different clients. I'd love to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, you're spot on, Rob. I completely agree with everything. So I'm in consulting, external consulting. So certainly we jump into a number of different organizations. Yeah. And I think I don't have anything to add. I think you nailed it. I don't have anything to add. And here, I'm going to add this. I love the ride along, the sit beside somebody who's an end user, somebody who you're trying to improve their decision-making ability with analytics. It's so easy to look at the data that they generate and assume a lot about the process, but to sit with somebody and walk through it's easy to take for granted. Oh, this is pretty simple. I've reduced it down to, you know, a matrix that's exactly this size and I can model it. But sitting with them and learning the decisions that they have to make and the inputs that they're taking in to do that, I think is really helpful when you're designing something for an end use, for an output to use. So I guess I want to second that. But I think that was a great answer, Rob.
Great. Sounds like we're on the right track, Ben.
Yes. All right. Or so you're the baseline. We're the ones who are on the right track then. Yeah. And then I guess to the second part of that, to speak to an individual who's now considering, had just heard that and said, wow, data science sounds awesome. I want to get into data science. What kind of advice would you offer that person?
Yeah, so I think the one thing I love about data science is I've seen a ton of profiles be successful. I've worked with folks who had a PhD in operatic theater who were tremendous. One who was a trained guitar player from the Berklee College of Music. I've seen folks who are chemical engineers, electrical engineers, business majors, and almost any profession. I think that the one is you have to have the passion to really learn the skills is one. Two is you just look at, you know, what is the stack that you're going to be working with. So you have to be able to be comfortable working with relational databases, you know, SQL as an example, being comfortable querying and building tables that you can then consume into your standard tools. You have to have a grounding in Python R or something similar. Understand as well your probability and statistics. A visualization layer is really helpful because then once you come up with a concept, you have to be able to make it consumable for senior leadership. So there's a variety of visualization tools out there. And then last is really understanding the end-to-end data science process, you know, whether it be CRISP-DM or, you know, agile methodology, whatever it may be. And I think if you can put those on there and then get especially if you're in an existing role where you can say, hey, I'm a financial analyst and I keep running into errors with my financial forecast, what's going on with that? You can actually come up with a better answer using these tools. Then you can actually start to build almost a portfolio of work to show that you're serious about this and you got these certifications, but you've applied it in a context. And then you start to build that portfolio of work and then you get an opportunity to move into the data science space. And one question I have for you, in addition to any reactions you have there, is we talked about certification. Is there any word that you're seeing about a standard certification for data science that's coming, much like you have for engineers or actuaries or CFAs? Any traction there? You think we're going to see that in data science?
Yes. That's a good question. There are a lot of disparate certifications. Most of the certifications that we see now are like tool specific. So you can get a certain cloud service or a certain programmatic language certification. I don't know, aside, you know, maybe from some of the online trainings that you can do and get a certificate or like a bootcamp certificate. It's just very disparate. It's just very broad. I don't think there's a single or even a handful of things that are going to be, these are the key certificates to have. I think that's the nature of data science, is so dispersed. There are so many players and technology providers and solution providers that there's not going to be like a one size fits all. I suspect that a lot of them are very helpful, but I don't think there's going to be a standard. I don't know. What do you think, Rob?
No clear answer either, because I've seen them pop up and I've always been kind of curious. But if I think about, you know, being an engineer and by the skin of my teeth getting through the first certification exam before you become a professional engineer, I forget what it was even called now, but I think Fundamentals of Engineering. And then if you do that, you can practice under a PE. And then after you do that for a couple of years, you can apply for your state license to be a PE. A lot of the reasoning for that is, you look like you were going to add something, Evan.
I'll probably bite my tongue here in a second, okay. But I don't suspect that data science will go that route where there's a, you know, here's the certification to be a practicing data science. And if you don't get that, you're not going to go to a big firm or a big, you know, either consulting firm or a big organization that has a large data science team. It just seems like too broad and too disparate of a field for that. But I'm ready to eat my words.
Well, this is a theory that I've been thinking about, is the reason a lot of that was done, and we learned this in engineering, is if you make wrong estimates or if you do incorrect calculations or you don't follow a standard, grievous bodily harm can be incurred, bridge collapses, things like that. And much like the actuaries, very similarly, is if the process is not followed and embedded and independent review and doesn't align to best practices, there can be significant financial losses or even in worst cases, promises that were made to customers for their beneficiaries or their retirement aren't going to be true, and folks have, you know, significant financial harm. So I think about that in the context of data science, where you start to think about interpretability. And as we see AI and machine learning really start to get traction in a lot more spaces, really automating some of these decisions, the data engineers, outside of data scientists that run these processes and build these models, start to have significant societal impact. So I wonder if there'll be a movement at some point to say, maybe I think you're right, it's very diverse, the use cases, but maybe they say, okay, if you're training a model for automated cars, or you're training a model that's going to make standard of care decisions, or you're training a model that's going to make a decision around medical treatment triage, is there going to be a need to be a certified data science for some of those? Not sure.
Yeah, you raise a good point, Robin. I think that's a closer point, or at least a more specific use case. And I could see maybe a responsible or ethical data scientist. And I don't know that there's ever going to be like some strict standard where it's, you know, that's translatable from engineering or from actuarial sciences. But if you've maybe are aware of biases that can be introduced, biases that are in your training data that you can perpetuate in this model that's in production, I still don't know that there would be the one model, but I could see some leaders in data science offering something like that in an ethical, responsible, unbiased data science practitioner training. That's a good idea. We'll talk offline.
Maybe we'll have to start a curriculum.
There we go. Right. I did want to touch on one thing from your answer earlier, about somebody embarking on a data science journey. You gave the example of like the financial analyst who's thinking maybe there's a better way to do this. And the term that comes to mind and what I think is an important skill set in addition to, you know, the litany of technical skills that you need is really intellectual curiosity. Are you eager to ask questions and think about new ways to do things and trying to understand how data comes to be and trying to understand what some analytic or model output is going to be? I don't think that's different from anything you said. It's just that intellectual curiosity piece, I think is probably a big one.
Absolutely. Because, you're going to run into roadblocks. You're going to run into challenges. Maybe your data is not going to be clean or the model's not going to have the performance you expected. And so that tenacity and really trying to understand why, you know, those folks who used to take apart the clocks as a kid because they just wanted to understand why they work, or, you know, the kid in the backseat, you know, just why being just that insatiable machine. You know, that's the sign. If you've got a kid who's in the backseat asking why, with every scientific question, point them towards data scientists. They're out well on their way.
My kids are at that age now, and I've only got a limited number of whys, but that I can still be optimistic about it before. Okay, don't be a data scientist. Just be a stop sign somewhere. Rob, I think we have time for one more question here. It's been a super interesting conversation. You touch a lot of areas in Pacific Life. You've touched on a lot of them here today. You've got a team with a diverse set of skills. If you could align all of your business partners to the Rob Horbin mission and the Rob Horbin goal, and you could point your analytic effort to do anything at Pacific Life, and everybody's behind you, you've got full stakeholder support, what would you want your team to work on?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think where I'd love to see us go next, and we're already starting to think about this conceptually, as I said, we've got great partners, willing to try new things. It's just been a tremendous journey. Oftentimes, and I am guilty of this, the engineer in me likes to say, you know, here's a problem, here's a solution. Analytics is often viewed, and we operate this way quite often, as here's a strategic problem we're trying to solve. We want to enter this market, or we want to optimize geographies, or here's a business problem we want to solve. Can analytics help us get there faster or more effectively? So it's almost like a supercharged, better screwdriver, but it's still solving a predefined problem. Where I'd love for analytics to go, and speaking with peers in the industry and you know, at conferences, I think everybody's trying to think through this, is how can analytics actually create entirely different business models? How can they create entirely different products or entirely different business models or even businesses, if you will? So that's where I'd love for that to be almost this greenfield thinking on what may be entirely different markets, business models, ways of doing business, clients that we can target that maybe we can't now with our existing model, but that actually, because of the power of analytics, it becomes either more cost effective, or we can reach people where they are, or we can, you know, open up that territory, that geography that previously would not have been available. So that's where I'd love to go next. And I know we're not alone in thinking about this, because I think everyone's thinking about, okay, we've tackled some of these problems. How do we actually transform our business? You know, there's transformation is the word. And I think we're on the cusp, not just within Pacific Life or our industry, but I think, you know, across society in the use of data science to really start to see these become more and more in the day to day. So, it's exciting for data science. It's exciting for, this industry and in all industries in data science. So, and as you see, there's a ton of open requisitions out there. So if for any folks watching or listening that are thinking about getting into the space, can't suggest it enough.
Awesome. That is a really exciting answer, Rob. And I think you probably inspired a lot of people. We'll link to anything that you've got available, Rob, here when the show is ready to air. So make sure you check the show notes there if you're interested, if you're inspired by Rob's answer and the future of analytics at Pacific Life. Rob, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Evan, it's been such a pleasure to reconnect. I look forward to connecting again soon.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
See you next time.